Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. And if you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener Podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Now let's get growing. Organic Gardener Podcast, and I am super excited because today is actually, even though you won't hear this today, January 29th, 2017, and it is my 2-year anniversary of the Organic Gardener Podcast. I launched the podcast 2 years ago today in 2015, and I'm just so excited because it's been growing, and it's because of wonderful listeners like you, the green future growers who are growing a greener future for us. And best of all, the person who is here today is a listener just like you guys who came from the Organic Gardener Facebook group. So if you join the Organic Gardener Facebook group, you'll get to meet her and other great members. And just, I can't thank you enough for all listening. So welcome to the show from the other side of the world where it's hot and sunny and she's sitting in air conditioning is Linda Simpson. Welcome, Linda.
Thanks, Jackie. Hey, congratulations on the 2-year mark. That's awesome. And that everyone supports you and follows you in this. I love it. I really love it. And yes, it's really hot here down under in Queensland, Australia. And beautiful. I'm looking out at a blue, blue sky with hopefully some rain clouds. Cross your fingers.
Okay. I just can't even hardly imagine that, but yeah, so the other side of the world, I love podcasting. This is so exciting. Well, so tell listeners a little bit more about yourself. You were telling me a little bit in the pre-interview chat that you're in a different area than where you grew up.
Yes, yes. Right? I grew up, Michael and I, my husband, and I both grew up in New Zealand, and it's a volcanic island. I was considering that just yesterday with him. New Zealand is just a volcanic island. It's a beautiful volcanic island. And my experiences there with gardening were very simple because everything just grows. For me, that was the beginning of gardening. And then moving here to Australia where the continent is harder for minerals, and where I live now is, it's sandy. I'm right near a beach. You know that low bushy stuff that's near the beach in most countries, the protective low hard growing trees? That's where our
like
suburb
dunes?
Is based.
In the dunes?
Yes, but then just stepped back in Australia because it's such a flat, well, I mean the states are too, a big flat expanse coming up to the coast. On the eastern coastline, the trees that grow here, that used to grow here before the suburb got to be here, are sort of swampy trees. This used to be a place where the Aboriginals would have fished 200 and 300 years and more ago, and the trees are all lower. They're 10 to 12 feet. There's not many get bigger. Some of the gum trees would. So there's really not a lot to grow what we call vegetables in. So you have to start. But yeah, we've traveled. I think once you start to travel, anyone who's traveled will get this. When you stay in one place, you sort of stay in one place. But I think once you move, it's easier to move again. And so we spent 5 years doing some contract work with tourist parks, the RV parks, things like that, managing, mm-hmm. and expanded our knowledge of areas, and then came home in 2011 and went, right, we're staying. That's it.
I think like life is like that. You go through seasons, and like sometimes you really want to travel and get out there, and other times you just want to be close to home. And I know that feeling. My mom's going through that. I just was saying, because last year for 100,000 episodes, which I had just broke 100,000 episodes at this time last year, I went to Paris to celebrate. It was my big celebration. So this year, I just posted this morning, I think, what should I do? Because 250,000, that's a lot. That's a lot of growth for my second year, especially since I've been teaching since September and have hardly been able to do anything compared to I was constantly putting out 8 episodes a month up until August or September or sometime. Now I've barely been putting out 2 or 3. So my numbers are growing. My content is cut back. I have put out some repeat episodes, but, so I was like, I need to go somewhere big this time. I was thinking of either going, I was trying to talk my mom to go into Bologna in Italy to the, Society of Children Book Writer and Illustrator Conference, or to go see Jean-Martin Fortier's, garden up in Quebec if he starts giving tours, or to Puerto Rico to visit John Lee Dumas, who's the head of my podcasting group. I'm thinking of going somewhere special. So if listeners have any suggestions, what I'm really hoping is John Lee Dumas is going to go to New York City and I can see my mom and go to a podcasting event and meet other podcasters in my one of my favorite cities too. But I don't know. Anyway, can't go anywhere till June for me, and I'm way off task. So, Linda, tell us about you. Tell us about your very first gardening experience. So you were in New Zealand. Is that when you had your very first?
Absolutely. I have a memory of helping Dad in the garden, helping in inverted commas, because I was little and I was one of those kids that was very active. Probably annoyed Dad more than anything. And even going through that time, there was always a vegetable garden where we were. Always. Mum and Dad grew. And probably that was because there wasn't a lot of money and that sustained us. But just seeing how he did it, you know, like I remember how he got rid of the earwigs by laying down a tube. That's one of my first cameo memories. The earwigs must have sheltered in this big plastic tubey thing at night, and then Dad poured boiling water down it. That not nice for the earwigs, but if they were eating our food, that was a way to do it without Mum and Dad were accidentally organic, if you like. They wouldn't have understood the term, and when I said it to Mum one day, she went, "We don't need that organic stuff," she said. And it was really it's just funny. Because where they lived, it's definitely like a crater, and the earth is beautiful. It's gorgeous. So, and he used to go to a chicken farm and collect the manure and make liquid fertilizer from it. He just did that. There was no big thing about it. It was just what you did to make the garden work. So how's that for bedding in an organic consciousness, hey?
That's so sweet. So I'll bet your dad treasures those memories of you being out there annoying him in the garden. Without a doubt. Is that kind of like how you learned how to garden organically, or then did you study it at all, or just from practicing in your own garden, or
studying and mistakes? I remember our garden, Michael and I had a garden where we lived further north in New Zealand, probably temperate to subtropical kind of climate. Just about anything grew. It's in an area called the Bay of Plenty, and it was really pretty. Big surfing beach, and we were just back from the beach, so we did gardening and beach and surf and stuff. And we grew carrots the same place twice. So there's a quick lesson there, because we ended up with wrong carrots, you know, because it's pretty quick. You understand it fairly fast, don't you? And there were already compost bins there. And I love learning. I'm never going to have never been the go-to a place to learn, like a university or something. But I love accumulating knowledge. So I hold on to what I want to. You know, like it stays with me. But when we came back, after all of the general knowledge that we had, when we came back to this property in 2011 to then, with the knowledge that we wanted to create our own, like a lovely, safe garden space, Michael and I did a permaculture design course. And that was just so expansive in its knowledge. It took everything that I thought I knew and just blew it out. And Jeff Lawton is a guy that I really spearheaded permaculture here. And yeah, great communicator. Really, really awesome for stories to help you better in your knowledge. So that just was amazing. Loved that. And have used that and shared that knowledge so much. So yes, just I learn organically, really. I just as I go.
All right, well, tell us about something. I'm like so excited because it's so like new and like I haven't heard about, like I haven't heard much, or like how far is even Australia from New Zealand? Here's why, like, American ignorance coming through. What?
Is it
compared to like in the United States, like from Montana to California or like Montana to Florida?
If you're flying, it's from. And okay, let's just go back to how New Zealand sits on the map. New Zealand at one stage would have fallen off Australia. So if you're looking north, New Zealand falls off the southeast corner of Australia. And to fly from my major city, which is an hour's drive away, to New Zealand is 3.5 hours flying. So it's not a great distance. It's sort of like an island. Don't tell the New Zealanders this. But as far as geography is concerned, it's an island off the coast, so it's a quick flight. I don't know it in kilometres or miles, but I just when I hop on a plane 3.5 hours later, I'm at Wellington.
That's a good,
which
yeah.
is the capital city. Yeah. But for the distance across Australia is huge, same as the States. It's yeah a massive continent. But New Zealand itself, the growing climate – I keep looking out my window. It's the time of the year for the mangoes to start their new growth. And the mango tree that I'm looking at has all of that little pink long-leafed growth hanging off it. And then next door to it is a rainforest tree, which is called an Illawarra flame. It has an awesome botanical name, Brachychiton acerifolius. How's that? And it loses all of its leaves to give you its flowers, and it's just the most amazing big tree. So yeah, that's my view.
Wow. Well, tell us about something that grew well this year, I guess.
Okay. We have a favourite thing, and it does grow well because it's a weed. Sorry, sweet potato. We had two gardens of sweet potato, and they were awesome this year. And that was in a year that was a bit funny. We had quite a hot winter, and so we had a few failures, which is a bit depressing because in the winter here, we grow your summer vegetables. So we would have had our cauliflowers and broccoli and all of those plants. And the sweet potatoes were awesome. And the tomatoes that we had were just made a jungle. Our best tomatoes to grow here are the smaller ones, not quite the tiny salad ones, but the next level up, which is plum size, I suppose. And they were just so productive. They coped with the weather amazingly. And we dried quite a few of them. Roasted, froze, you know, just kept that going. And we're all set
Yum.
Now.
I love sweet potatoes.
Oh, and just mashing sweet potatoes with pumpkin or with something I'd quite like to grow well, but our climate's wrong for it, is darn it, it slipped out of my head. It's a big celeriac. Celeriac and sweet potato, mash that together. Oh, that's so yum.
I can put them in anything. All right, well, how about something you're excited to try different next year?
Well, I was looking at, we always miss the planting of the garlic season, and I want to really be on the board for that this time and actually put some garlic in. But it's a bit of a juggle because we're meant to have a rainy season. It should have started by now. It's running late. And so if it flows on too long, then I miss the beginning of it and it doesn't get the cold growing period that an onion needs. So that would be the newest thing. And I'm going to try onions again. We did, the big red salad onions. Yeah, well, last year we grew them and they were fantastic. I didn't expect them to grow so well. The white onions must need that bit more cold, but the red onions just, I think they were called technically Welsh bunching onions, but they grew into big red salad onions. Oh, they were just so good. So they're a definite for this year. And, but we're just, yeah, we have to grow things that really enjoy our climate, because we have a thing here. Well, everyone's going to have their pests, aren't they? But one of our really most disappointing pests is it's called the Queensland fruit fly. And what it does is it gets to your fruit, vegetables like zucchini, lemon. We've got tamarillos out the front and it does that, and it lays the baby in there when the fruit's really, really, really young. So then, when it gets bigger, it just becomes mush, and the baby grows. And we're in what we call a fruit fly highway. They quite like the coast, so we've been using an organic attractant for the male, and it's getting better and better. So we are starting to get braver with the fruit that we grow because, yeah, it's disappointing to have something eaten by a critter. That leads us to what.
So then, wait, just let me just like, so then how does that work? Like you attract the males and then just by getting rid of them somehow or something, you have less breeding?
Well, the girls are actually laying unfertilized eggs, so it's working because when I pull in a zucchini or a cucumber, you can see where she's laid her egg, but there's no baby, and it's quite a quick cycle. So the baby happens fairly quickly. It's not a baby, a caterpillar. Here you go. I love critters, so to me, they're babies because a mum has laid them. So the
But
males
they're
are
not going to grow
attracted.
then. They're like eggs, right?
They're just unfertilized eggs. She's just laying because she had to, like that's her mission. But she hasn't
Right.
met a male. She
Like the
doesn't. Yeah,
chickens
she.
just lay eggs, whether there's a rooster or not.
I mean, there's no. I haven't read about that anywhere. It's just experiential. The males definitely go to the attractants, and we've made the attractants out of the normal hanging fly. You can buy fly attracting things, but they like to come in from the side. So we just had to make holes in the side, and then you just pour this. It's a local firm that make it, and it's they just. Their whole mission in the life is to improve the soil and to have organic treatments, and yeah, they're great. So the males just come in the morning. Their time is in the morning, and when we were first doing it, I did a count. I had four on a property of our property's 570 square meters, so it's a smallish urban block. It's not the tiniest. And I put it out one morning at 11, and I went out the next morning at 11, and I counted 160 little
Oh my
flies trapped
goodness.
already. I know it's we're way better than that now, but in a place where these things like laying in lemons in the citrus, and there's loads. You know how many lemons there are out the back of a person's house, so there will always be these things. So, but the males just go. We add a tiny little bit of soap, like a drip of hand soap into the mixture, and that means that their wings makes them drown quicker. It's quicker because we're still killing being, aren't we? And I don't like doing that either. So it's a hard call.
Yeah, but they multiply so fast. I think you kind of got to get rid of them, right?
Oh, you do. And
I know
it's
my custodian gets really upset if we get fruit flies. He's like, because he's always on me about saving my cotton. He's actually been really good with me. And I take pretty good care. We're getting our worms on Wednesday. I'm so excited for my class
Are you getting
to eat the
oh for
compost. And
compost?
I'm,
Oh, well done. Yes, that's
yeah,
such
we're getting
fun.
like 500 worms to do the
And
vermicomposting
what will you
thing.
have them
And the
in, Jackie? What will
custodian
you?
said they would separate the compost for us too in the cafeteria. Sorry.
Oh, right, yes, because there's some things that, although our worm, wanting to tell you about the worm farm, which was a
Okay.
direct link back to our permaculture design course,
Okay.
Jeff taught us how to use a regular bath, like a person's bath, to raise that. So Michael, my gorgeous Michael, is really clever, and he set the bath up at, I suppose, about the bottom of it would be about 2 foot off the ground. And so we layer it with things that the compost worms like to eat, which is manure and paper, and get them started with all of those foundations. And the bath actually drains through the normal plug hole into a bucket. And so once a day, that bucket gets, well, once a day, because that's when I remember, bucket gets put onto the garden and I give them more food. It's a really simple system. And I've got it set up so that we're kind
It
of
goes
dealing with it
that
half and
fast.
half. It's because there's, in the very beginning, not, it's just water draining through whatever you put in. But now I'm dealing with the bath in sort of sides. One side is ready for me to use the actual worm compost, and the other side they're feeding in, which gives them a lot of space. It's way more than like a little worm tower. And the side that's ready, when I
Sure.
water it, I'll water it each day, and that water will then drain through the warm worm compost into the bucket. And it's so simple. So simple system. And we have the availability of the worm compost for our seedlings and the gardens, and yeah, just making soil on our little block.
Wow. So how many worms? I ordered a, just like 500 worms.
I don't know. We actually got the worms from a friend's compost. And oh, hey, this is something that you could teach the children. I don't know how much you know about worms. I love little critters. As an aside to what we're talking about, I have done poems and stories about critters for children, color in just to get it.
Oh.
I call it kids and critters. Anyway, so when you're dealing with the children, once, are you using worm towers or bigger articles for the worms?
I'm just putting him in like I got this giant bin at Target.
Perfect,
Just like a
perfect,
plastic
perfect.
tub.
Okay, so because worms have families, okay, they have communities. The compost worms do. I don't know about the big earthworms that are in the garden, but the little compost worms, if you put an avocado shell into the compost, the worms will generate like a home in it. And another way that you can show the children that the worms are creating a community is to put a small plastic funnel in, just upright, just push it down, put some nice food in there for them, and they'll gather. And I've just noticed that. Again, no one wrote about it anywhere. It's just what you experience. And they really do like places to gather. So that could be something to help the children see that that worms aren't ucky.
I was worried about that, but for the garden club, one of like for my Kris Kringle thingy at Christmas, this teacher gave me a basil plant to plant, like little planting kit. And
Yeah.
so I had the garden club kids do it. So they each took a scoop of like this teacher had given me a petunia at the beginning of the year and this giant plant full of dirt. And so we've just been kind of like scooping that out. And I gave each kid a little cup of dirt and said, here's some basil seeds to take home. And they played in that bucket and looked for worms for like a half hour. And then one of the kids in the gardening club that's in my regular classroom has started my whole class. I can't keep them out of that bucket. They're like, I'm like, all right, good. Well, I'm not so worried about the worms, like them all being like, ick, worms, because they are like fighting over the little bit of dirt in my room already. So it's pretty funny because I was getting them worms for the class pet and was going to tell them we're just, that's our class pet. But somehow we got a guinea pig that's coming tomorrow and they all know. So that's gonna be fun too. So this week's gonna be exciting. We're getting worms and a guinea pig.
And the guinea pig stuff, you know how you clean up after the guinea pig? All of that can just go into the bin.
Oh really? Oh, I didn't know.
Well,
that.
We've been looking after a galah. Is a pink and grey Australian parrot. I don't know that galahs are anywhere else than Australia. And so cleaning out Roxy's cage means that we've got newspaper and whatever fruit or whatever vegetable I've given her, you know, that she's munched and dropped. And I just wrap that up and put it in the worm farm. It's wrapped in paper because they like eating paper. Mm. They like shredded paper.
That's what I was thinking. Maybe my classroom is finally going to get cleaned up because I have, like, it's so hard for me to throw, like, just paper in the garbage. I save, like, even, you know, because you're always cutting out things for the kids. And I'm like, oh, they can make something out of those. They can cut triangles out of that or circles or, like, you know, I think. All right. Okay. I need to let you talk and me be more quiet. Tell us about something that didn't maybe work the way you thought it was going to this season.
Well, our season of winter, I mentioned that a little bit earlier too, was the winter was not cold enough to grow what we wanted to grow. And it's our only opportunity to grow cabbages. We don't really grow the big cabbages because they take too long to grow. And this type of climate has more burrowing bugs and things. So, and I don't like to use, well, we like to operate organically. So you grow stuff that suits your climate as much as you can. So we had one whole garden where all of the early cauliflowers came to fruition. That was awesome. And then the broccoli and what else? Oh, the kale. And kale usually grows really, really well. Just all failed because it was too hot. We had some days in that were the middle of the day was 24, which is a night time in the high of summer, and that's Celsius. And I should really just figure out the difference for you, but just an indicator is it was just too warm, and the nights didn't get into single digits very much, and that didn't give these essentially winter-grown plants like a place to grow. So that was sad. We just ended up leaving the gardens fallow. I grew some beans in them, just put nutrients back down into them and covered them with mulch and said, we're going to wait until we get a decisive season. And just when it started to become more into summer, got the zucchinis in and started to, because it's kind of sad when something fails, isn't it?
Yeah. I think gardeners always have that optimism, though, that it'll work next year. Or I really like the way you said that. We'll just wait until we get a decisive summer. Like, you know, it's just like you just have to be patient. Gardening's like that. We had a very similar, you know, last year, like our big problem was it seemed like the ground melted really early. You had to be really patient because you were like always worried you were going to jump the gun. You know, there's so many things I've read about, you know, you might seem like it's okay to put them out early, but the things you put out later are going to do better anyway. Like the seeds, like that warmer soil. And then we got like 2 weeks of super hot 100 degree weather the first 2 weeks of June. And then it cooled back down again. It just seemed like we didn't grow peas last year that we always grow. We didn't have as much of luck with kale didn't do well for me last year. A lot of things that Mike normally grows did not go the way he normally did. He didn't have as much time either, but for sure the weather is just... But also at the same time, I feel like, you know, you're dropping a lot of golden seeds about things that you have to do, things, or like just like having that attitude and like things changed. And I don't know, there's just something that makes me feel like optimistic. Like some things always work out in the garden.
They do. And other times, you know, the seed saving idea, and people start to save seeds and grow on from their seeds.
So they become climatized.
Yes. One of the things where we failed was we had bought corn that I gather was, here it's called an F1, you know, altered corn so that it's sweeter or it does something. And we grew on from that corn. And the second growing from that corn was good. The third was ugly. And that's where, if you're going to save seed, I just say out loud to as many people who think about it as possible, save good seed, like save heritage seed or organic seed, because it's just disappointing. And you can blame yourself for your bad garden. You know, like you actually don't maybe think about the fact that it was the seed was scientifically altered to do something. That happens with quite a lot of the regular growing fruit. And here, papaya will grow quite quickly, and it's kind of like a Zoom plant. It just grows and go for it. But if you take the seeds from a store-bought one, then you could end up with something that looks like it's got loads and loads of fruit on it, but they don't mature because they're not coming from a place of health and organicness. So that's another failure that we've had a couple of times. And it's, yeah, kind of sad. It stops you wanting to grow them.
Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the secret of the success of this show, is because that failure, people don't want to fail. And so people sharing their different tips and tricks and what's working is helping all of us grow a little more and be more inspired when we hear this little tip will save here and there. Because definitely being effective, you know, and just getting more produce from the same amount of work or from less work, you know, will help all of us either grow more food in the long run or, you know, just to be able to garden. It's been so fun. I just like, it feels like I'm like, didn't we just start? It's only been like 5 minutes. Okay. Well, so then what's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something that you have to force yourself to get out there and do? Is it getting rid of those fruit flies?
Well, I don't really like, let's use the word killing. I don't like killing things. I would rather something just didn't. So that would be hard. That's hard.
Or like not something so ate it, because then it's just part of the food line.
Well,
like if a beneficial insect would just come in and eat those fruit flies.
Well, that's it. Like when the zucchini.
Or those earwigs, because I hate earwigs, and I gotta say, I could probably boil some earwigs because those things just creep me out. Well, my thing is just like, let's just not grow romaine, because we're not gonna grow romaine without earwigs, so just don't even grow it. But I saw Mike ordered some romaine seeds.
We had like when the zucchini plant. Do you call them zucchini? You do. Some people call them that other word. Anyway, I can't think of the other word for it. But anyway, zucchini, the small marrows. And it came to the end of its life. And here that means that because it's weakened and it's come to the end, all of the bugs go and lay their babies on it. And so what I did for recycling was I hauled the whole plants out and dragged them and put them in with the hens, in Australia we call hens chooks, that's kind of the slang for them. And I just hauled them into their run, and they were totally happy with that. They were digging and finding all the little caterpillars that had grown, and that's so as far as least favorite and the hardest thing. We live close to an environmental park that goes onto a canal. So any rats that come and share our property are swamp rats, which are kind of cute. They're not like Rattus rattus, which is that big, you know, rat that looks a bit not so cute. And they, in the past, they've eaten out our sweet potatoes. Like they'll just burrow into the middle and eat it, or they just eat stuff because they're rats. They do that thing. And we accidentally ended up with two cats. Not that we were looking for companion animals, but a mama cat that had been dumped and, of course, ended up pregnant, had her baby in our chooked area. And when the baby was 4 weeks old, she kind of brought it out and went, well, now I need help. You know, that kind of – and so now we don't have any rats because as Calico was growing and hiding away, she was hunting. So now we don't have any rats. Then rats don't come. but from the least favorite activity, there's not one. Like I'll just, if it's something I don't want to do, I just go and do a little bit of it and then stop, and then do a little and then stop. Like in one of our gardens, it's got a walkway through the middle. I call it the St. Andrew's Cross Garden because it's the walkway's a plus sign, and there's four raised gardens. And we laid crushed rock through it. So it's called crusher dust or decomposed granite, whatever you want to call it. It's just that little crushed rock. And weeds really love growing in it. So it looked really nice until the weeds thought, ha! And now we have to rethink whether we pave it or not. But the just sitting out there weeding a stretch is just so annoying. So I do that a little bit at a time. And that's my way of coping.
I know how that
goes.
I don't want to. We have a walkway that's gotten a little out of control this last year or two. When Mike was doing the paper last summer and I was working, the two of us were working just like crazy. Some things got out of hand, and I don't know how we're ever going to get those walkways back to the way they were after this year, but yep, a little bit at a time and stop. That's a good, a really good, you know, I went to this teacher training yesterday and we were playing the timer game, and then the kids get to win these granny's wacky prizes, which is like you set a timer and they get to giggle for 15 seconds straight. But boy, when you saw the videos of the kids giggling, I just can't wait. My room's gonna be like filled with laughter next week. There's so many fun games. This one game called Graveyard, where the kids like lay on a carpet, and if they smile and you walk around and look at them, and if they look at you and they smile or laugh, they have to go back to their seat. That's gonna be so fun. I love second grade.
That's a great a great mode on laughter as a healer. Yeah.
But anyway, but it's just those like little itty bitty prizes. The lady giving the training, she's like, they'll sit for 20 minutes for 15 seconds of fun. Just wait. I'm like, all right. They did. They look like they were having a blast in the videos. Anyway, Linda, what's your favorite activity to do in the garden?
It's not gardening, actually. I like taking photos of the critters that live in my garden and the flowers, and I love recording it. I just enjoy. At the moment, one of my we have a spot that I call the Folly. It's built where we have a breeze, and one of Australia's great spiders is a golden orb, and it's one that has a golden sheen to its web, and she's sitting in the back. There's a Callistemon, which is left over from when the garden wasn't a vegetable garden. I leave it there because the Callistemon and the Grevillea are for the birds. And she's grown this enormous web because she's a tropical spider. And she's just sitting at the back of where we sit in the shade. And yeah, so taking photos of the lizards that live here, the geckos, just all the things that make our garden work, the butterflies. Yeah, it's fun. I do it every day. Every day I take photos.
Aww. I like that too. And then I like to paint for my photos. Sometimes I like to paint when I'm just sitting down there. But watercolors are all about layers. It's very hard. My mom and I are two totally different people when it comes to painting watercolors. She's like very like natural, do it right then and there, and it's done. I'm like, take the picture, trace the picture, you know, get the thing out, mark where my whites are with a W, like, and then I paint for layers. And I can spend like 20 hours on one painting, but it's like 1 hour this day, let it dry. And sometimes it helps to let it dry for 2 weeks because it really gets hard. And then put another layer over it, yes. And then another layer. It's just building. Anyway, I'll bet I can just picture the photos, kind of like a mixture of Charlotte's Web in Australia. And just the giant glistening sun where with the dew in the morning coming up on her web and just the golden, like that you call her a golden spider. I like that. What's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
It's a mixture, actually. You know, like I enjoy people and I enjoy listening and learning. So, a mixture. There's no one thing. I can't think of one thing. The most impactful moment was doing the permaculture design course with Jeff. That brought together everything we'd learnt for and expanded it. So that may be. But even just chatting to people who garden. I love learning like that from people who have done it.
I think that's awesome. A lot of my guests have said that the best advice comes from talking to other people who have done that. And I think, you know, in this world, like I constantly hear people going, oh, people are so into their phones. Oh, people are not communicating anymore. Oh, people have lost the ability to communicate. But one, to me, it's like, no, we've found the ability to communicate with people who have similar interests instead of just talking to somebody because they just happen to be next to you. And then the other thing, I feel like people are much more into attending conferences and going places where you can meet like-minded people. Just like you're saying, you went to see Jeff Lawton, and probably a lot of what made it such a great event were the other people that were there that share that same passion. And I think there's a lot more of that. I know in the podcasting world and in the entrepreneur world, people are constantly, you know, there's always the what conferences are you going to? And even like when I was in Paris last year celebrating, I went to like found myself at this giant agriculture conference in Paris. Granted, like nobody there spoke any English. It was like they warned me, the guys in my hotel warned me. They're like, just because you're still in Paris, you've been pretty spoiled and everybody here speaks English, and don't expect the people at your conference to. And they didn't. They had, you know, I couldn't communicate at all at the conference, but still, it was fun to go. So well, anyway, Linda, so what's your favorite tool? Like if you had to move, or like when you moved from New Zealand to Australia, like was there something you took with you, or what could you not live without?
In the garden, I don't know, because a lot of the work I do is with my hands. I don't necessarily always use a tool. I will put gloves on now that we have cats. Sorry?
I said I've had other guests say my hands.
Oh, definitely. Because I was just thinking, when Michael goes to dig sweet potatoes, he uses the fork. But I don't. I will use my fingers. I'll trail down and run around and get the whole potato out. I just, even when I'm weeding, it'll be my fingers until the weed is too deep, then I'll leave it until I can come back to it. But yeah, just I use my hands a lot.
You know, and I think that's like a great plus to organic gardening, like, you know, just like a shout out to it, or I don't know what you were going to call it. But, you know, a lot of people can't even imagine digging their hands into their beds. And that's like kind of part of the secret to raised beds, is that your soil is so healthy and so like easy to, you can just, you know, it's not like you have to have a shovel. Like when you have those deep beds full of that nice natural soil, you can use your hands. What's your favorite recipe that you like to cook from the garden?
We really love barbecuing vegetables. Have you ever barbecued? Grilled is your term, I
Yeah,
think.
you bet.
Vegetables. One of the favorites is to make a mash, like probably sweet potato and pumpkin, and then just grill whatever. Like at the moment, we have Lebanese eggplants. We've just finished the zucchini and beans. I don't grow red pepper very well, so I have to buy it. But that just all goes
They're
on
hard.
to the barbecue with halloumi. And if Michael wants, I eat vegetarian. So if he wants to eat critter, then he has to put it on himself. But yeah, everything just goes on. Might add some mushrooms. That would be one of my sad moments here, is that actually to grow mushrooms here, you really need to have like an air-conditioned cellar or something like that because it's too hot for them. But yeah, everything goes on and then just gets piled on your plate, and you can swirl it with truffle oil or some like a hollandaise, whatever you feel like really from there. Yum.
That does sound yum. Mike was telling me the other day, he's like, I've got a great project for you. You should grow the mushrooms. He was like, it's perfect. It's like no work. You'll love it. And I just was like, no, that's not the job for me. And he's like, why not? And I'm like, it's just not. I don't know why. The thought of mushrooms, it's kind of just that fungusy, like, it's just that weird. I have like some weird cleaning issues. And that's, I don't know, maybe if I try it, I'll change my mind and I'll like it. I mean, I love the compost, but at first I was just like, no, I don't want to have anything. But he doesn't like mushrooms either, so I don't know if anyone's going to do mushrooms here. But man, are mushrooms getting expensive in the store? I just can't even bring myself to buy them. They're so expensive these days, so maybe it'll become reality. And I do love mushrooms.
What's a
We get
comparison like?
in the spring these wild mushrooms called morels around here that you can pick. Mushrooms are like, I don't know, just like a regular container is like $2.50 now. And to me, to pay over $1.50 for a container of mushrooms just seems crazy. And they were on sale yesterday, 2 for $5. That was the sale price.
And
Is that
that's
what you were
big
asking?
field
How much are
mushroom,
they?
is that right?
No, just like those white button mushrooms. I don't know, just like your
Wow.
generic white. Or they were
Because I
white
don't
or
know how
brown,
much
but
that
just
would
like, I don't
weigh.
know. Are they Cello mushrooms? Or Cello's the company, maybe? I don't know.
Because
What now?
the that's right, I won't, I'm sidetracking. I'll stop.
No, you're not. I just missed what you said. All right. So how about a favorite internet resource? Where do you like to go on the internet? To Jeff Watson's website?
I do. I read. Jeff actually puts out a Friday message where he just shares what he's gleaned, and you'll learn. He just does quick. It's called the Friday Five. He'll do five things that he's found that people have sent to him that he thinks are worth sharing. So, and Jeff has a mindset that I appreciate. Really, apart from that, it's what a friend calls internet tarot. You just Google and pick up what you want, and that's how I learn. If I want to find out something, I just do a search, and that's for
Internet
anything
tarot,
that
I
I
like
need.
that.
I know, I thought that was really cool because you really just go blasting through and find a bit that pertains to you. But no, I just
Absolutely.
look. And even with all the
Okay.
gardening sites that, like, oops, I was going to say the Facebook pages that I joined that are organic based. Again, I just cruise through them, see what's there, read it, store it, quit it. Yeah, it's not, it's very frivolous. It's not organized.
I like that. It's true. There's such a wealth of information and just different places and different times. And just, I love the way people share and I love seeing different things. And some days I'll be like, oh, I'm gonna go check out Instagram. And other days I'll go check out Pinterest. And And there's always something. There's so many cool people out there sharing great stuff, and it's just inspiring. So those are perfect answers. How about if, do you have a favorite book?
Easy answer is no, because I'm a reader, so I read loads of stuff. If there was one thing that I would refer back to, there's a lady here who was probably a little bit into the sustain yourself because, you know, the earth's going to get scary. But her knowledge, she died last year, I think. Isabel Shipard is her name, and she, the most amazing, her book, and it was full of loads of different information, health information on what a herb can offer you. And I do, I love complementary healing. So for me, that would be just knowing that I could grow herbs that would value add is awesome. But I don't.
What herbs are you growing in your garden now?
Okay, where to start? I'll start on the left. I've got lemongrass, then around further, comfrey. Lemon verbena is not a herb, but it's beautiful. It's lovely. Then over oregano and thyme, a kind of forever coriander, a plant that was called something savory with an M word that I forgot, but I use it. It's great. And it spreads itself, so it's a good ground cover. So going along from there. Oh, another plant that was called an olive herb, which when you put it in makes things taste like olive. They didn't put the botanical name on it, so I have no idea, but it's happy. We did thyme. And parsley, when it wants to, like when the parsley's just about dead now. Mint, peppermint, rosemary, lavender. Think from there.
I can practically smell it from here.
It's out the front.
That's a lot.
Out the front. We have probably about 6 meters to the front of our boundary. I've decided not to be the person that annoys the council, because our council doesn't really like you planting on the street. So we just leave grass there, but our front area is our orchard. So, and underneath that, we put herbs that would like growing out there. Like I know kaffir lime's not a herb, but they use it like a herb, like the leaves, and curry tree. We have a lot on this little property, actually. It's good.
Sounds lovely. Do you have any kind of business advice for listeners?
My background's in marketing, so I'm always thinking about things like that. You know, if somebody wants to sell something, they've got to do it because they love to grow it. To me, that works. You know, when you go to the organic farmers market or something like that, the man comes to mind, the man who sells organic strawberries through the strawberry season. He's just so enthusiastic about what he grows. And the lady who sells her mushrooms, she just knows all about them, you know. So that, to me, if you're going to sell something, it's what you're passionate about, whether it's seeds or, like, I potted up some vanilla plants because we grew a vanilla, and we've got some vanilla pods happening. I'm sidetracking again, Jackie. And I thought,
that's okay.
I'll grow some and see if I can. And I did five. And they are all taken. So obviously the vanilla loved my loving, and it grew. And so now I can. But, you know, that's the thing about anything you do like that. If you love it and it grows, then you can pursue it a bit further, can't you? But if you do it just for money, then I don't know. I just don't see the success in that. It's got to be love and money.
Absolutely. Okay, ready for the final question?
Yes.
Okay. If there's one change you would like to see, Linda, to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
I believe that our groundswell of knowledge, us doing our gardens at home, being happy within ourselves, and perpetrating good options, good activities, and good thoughts about it, I believe that groundswell is the magic. That's, to me, what will change things. Because without going too big, I believe that it was Margaret Mead who said that, basically, if I can't remember the direct quote, but change will come from one person making the difference. And that's what we got to do at home. And you're doing that with me. Yeah. I talk to people. I made my phone go quiet. Yeah, because I put my phone on silent and it must have gone past the... But, yeah, just groundswell of movement. Like, that, to me, makes the difference. Whenever somebody comes to our place to pick up something and they see the garden, their eyes absolutely light up and they go out and they want to know about it. Now, they may never plant a garden, but they've been inspired in some small way. And that, yeah, that to me is what will grow change.
I think so too. I hear so many people so depressed these days and just like, I don't know, whining all the time. And I'm just like, you know what? I have this podcast where I talk to like the amazing earth caring for people who are like full of energy and these great millennials. And like, I don't want to hear it. Just don't tell me any more bad news. And I'm just going with the people who are like, yeah, we're going to change this world and that are doing it. And I don't know. I think my listeners are amazing. Just like you're one of my amazing listeners. And you're right. Your little garden in your urban area is inspiring people. And they probably walk by and smell it. Smells so good. And think, man, I wish I had a green thumb like that lady.
And it's just...
Do you have an inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the garden and start their own garden? Not that you haven't given us a bunch of golden seeds and just shared lots of inspiration.
I just believe really strongly that something created or done with joy is going to be better for everything. So if someone wants to start a garden, don't make it hard. Just do something fun, something easy. You know how you gave the children basil seeds. If you make it hard, you'll not move forward on it, and that will become another negative tick in your brain. Oh, I failed at that, or I failed at that. And so I always move to what I want to do with joy. And that doesn't mean I don't do sort of hard things. It just means, like, if you're going to go and do something, do it joyfully. Choose to do it joyfully, and then it makes a difference. It really makes a difference to your heart and to how you do things. That's how I operate, and it works really well.
Well, listeners can connect with you in the Organic Gardener Facebook group. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, I have so appreciated the time spent with you, and I really, really enjoy the Facebook content that comes through the group too. It's really cool. And thanks for choosing me to talk.
Well, I wish I could be there more. Good. I wish I could be there more for sure. The one good thing is... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's up to us to... grow the group. Hey. I'm stopping.
I should be off next summer. So, you know, hopefully I won't have to have a summer job, or at least not a big one if I do. And I will get to be in the garden and active in the Facebook group and really just like... And Mike, hopefully this spring, is going to get off his mini farm. So I'll have tons of content to post and... I'll be very active. And I don't know what's going on. I've been getting these weird WordPress things. So if people have signed up and you're not getting your private special invite to the Facebook group, let me know. Because I'm a little confused about what's going on. But then I tried to enter somebody's email. I thought, well, these emails aren't on the list. Maybe people aren't pushing confirm. You have to, like, confirm your subscription, listeners, if you're out there listening. But if you want to join Linda and I in the Facebook group, and lots of other great members like Robin Kelsey, others that are there, Joe the Mason and John Moore, who is another Australian, and Kim Romelli from New Zealand, just come over and visit with us and share your great things that are going on and what you're doing, and teach us something, and certainly come be a guest on the show and share your knowledge if you want. Thank you so much, Linda, for talking to me this Monday morning in Australia and Sunday afternoon here in Montana on my second anniversary of the Organic Gardener podcast.
Oh, you're so welcome. I had fun. Thank you.
It is fun, right? All right. Have a good day. Thanks,
Linda. Take care, Jackie. See you.
Thank you for listening to the Organic Gardener podcast. I'd like to encourage you to visit our website at organicgardenerpodcast.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast.com. And it will link right to the show notes and all that we've talked about on today's show. If you like what you've heard today, we'd love it if you would head over to iTunes and give us a hopefully 5-star review. It really helps us get found and share the knowledge with other listeners. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.